of freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well, now you've got it.
Ray, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio! The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Whistleblower Heroes, Everyday Heroes, and Educators sharing the information you need to know here on Revolution Radio, and I'm your host, Ella. What is a whistleblower? A whistleblower is a person who makes public disclosures of wrongdoing, corruption, and crime, and these courageous people often suffer retaliatory actions because of their disclosures. In the end, many of these people are often the catalyst for needed change and are eventually lauded as heroes, and I'm here to celebrate these heroes and give them a platform because shining a light on wrongdoing wherever it occurs plays an important role in keeping society peaceful, free, and just. And so with me today is Max Egan. He's an author, he's a documentarian, musician, artist, father, and somewhat of a mystery. His book is titled Earth's Forbidden Secrets, and he has created some wonderful documentaries that can be viewed on YouTube. Transformation, The Calling, The Awakening, which is one I really enjoy, and several others as well. And most of the time these days, it's spent for him on the radio show, on his radio shows and video presentations, and researching into government corruption and ancient history, working on his next book and artwork. So I just want to say thank you again for joining me.
Pleasure to be here, Dylan. Always good to come onto Revolution Radio.
Is there anything you want to add to that or correct?
Oh, no, you're pretty well covered it all. I mean, I do a lot of things. I'm pretty well active in the community out there. I get out there and travel the world and speak to as many people as I can. And it's good. I think it's good to get out there and meet people and to try to make a difference on the ground and let people know that you're real. So, Yeah, that's kind of what I do. But you basically covered it all, I think, in that presentation.
Okay, so how did you end up doing pursuing the things you pursued? I mean, you know, this is a tribute to you. So do you want to maybe tell me about, you know, what you were like as a child and what your motivations were and how you ended up, you know, basically, as I was asking, doing the things that you do these days and this interest in government corruption and the like?
Well, as a child, like, I was a pretty sort of a quiet sort of a child. I kind of spent a lot of time on my own. I woke up very early. Like, when I was 4 years old, I realized something was terribly wrong. When I found out we had to buy land, I didn't understand the concept of owning land. I didn't understand how you could think you could own any part of the earth. And I didn't understand how government thought they could own the land and we had to save up money to just get somewhere to live. None of it made any sense to me. So I kind of spent my childhood as an observer. I thought I was in a madhouse and everyone was crazy. And when I was 8 years old, my parents showed me, or my mother showed me a picture and an encyclopedia of the pyramids, and she told me that no one knew how they were built. And I thought, that looks pretty normal. It's like a pretty easy structure to build. You know, I went out in the sand pit and I built myself a little pyramid out of sand and thought that was pretty simple, you know. But then I started reading about them and finding out about them, and I got completely fascinated by it. So I went down this rabbit hole of exploring ancient history. It became a fascination for me ever since I was a child. So it was just the way I thought, you know. I just never really fit in with anything. When I got to high school, I find it myself that I was arguing with every teacher that I came across, every class that I was in. I sort of questioned everything they were trying to teach me and got kicked out of three or four schools. By the time I was in the third year of high school, I had my own desk outside the principal's office because no class had had me, so I kind of left school halfway through my third year high school exams and became a musician and just sort of played guitar for most of my life. I figured if I wasn't out there playing and making money from playing, then I would have been sitting at home playing. So I just kind of did that. And it gave me the ability to kind of live on the outside of society. So I got to explore a lot of the stuff. You know, I had plenty of spare time. I traveled a lot because I was in bands and always traveling. And so I was going to sort of unique and exotic places and always asking people what were the ancient myths in the area and what were the ancient, you know, stories of the area and where was the old libraries that I could go and find old books to read up on stuff. And so, you know, kind of created a life where I was able to research all these questions and live on the outside of society while I was doing it and express the art of being me. So I was always kind of very artistic. So I kind of fell into that. And all through this series of events, I mean, I learned all these skills along the way. You know, even through my divorce and having to communicate with my son, the only way I could do it was online. So that gave me the understanding of how to build a website, how to create videos, how to do all sorts of stuff like this. And, you know, it gave me all the skills I needed to do exactly what I'm doing now. But I never knew that I was gathering these skills along the way. And then when it got to the time for me to do it, the universe kind of took everything away from me and just left me with my research and put me onto this path that I'm on now. I never really planned to be a radio host. I never planned to be an activist. I never planned to be speaking out and doing the things that I'm doing. But the universe kind of pushed me towards it. And it created a life, you know, prior to this where I gathered all this information and all the skills I needed to do exactly what I'm doing now. And to me, it seems really easy doing what I'm doing, traveling around the world and just kind of blowing with the wind. You know, I've got a saying, if you throw yourself to the wind, you can ride it. And that's what I've been doing for most of my life. And I kind of live day to day and week to week and never know where the next bread and butter's coming from or anything like that. But I just kind of trust in the universe and it all works out. And I kind of bounce all over the world and do all this stuff and everything just kind of works out. And I never really question it or try to let it work out. It just does. And I've always figured that if I'm in my heart and if I'm on the right path and I'm doing the right thing and I'm maintaining my honesty in it, then the universe will guide me. And it does. And, yes, so that's kind of the journey of how I got to where I am now. It's a kind of a, it's an interesting one. There's nothing planned in it at all. It's just kind of a free spirit that never really fit in. I mean, I'm a great hope for all the misfits out there. And you'll find that most of the misfits, I think a lot of the homeless people you see on the street, a lot of the people that we perceive to be society's outcasts are actually really talented, really artistic people that simply can't function inside this slavery system. You know, I was in L.A. a few days ago, and I was at Venice Beach, and we were having a meal on the beach side, on the curbside, and there was a homeless guy who'd wheeled a grand piano out onto the footpath on a pallet. This guy in this old ratty suit and this ratty long gray hair, and he was playing the most incredible classical music you've ever seen. I mean, this guy could be working in Carnegie Hall. You know, and when he got off and had a break, then this other Negro guy got up there with an old beanie on, ratty old clothes on, and he sat there and was playing Bizet, the opera Carmen, note for note, absolutely perfect. And this guy could be working in Carnegie Hall as well. So this is a sort of homeless skateboard people.
I mean, did he have roller skates on?
No, he didn't. He didn't.
It's not that one, okay.
Yeah, I mean, incredible the sort of stuff that you see. These homeless people, most of them are incredibly talented. They just can't fit in with society, and neither could I. But the universe kind of managed to provide a path for me, and I've never really asked why or how. I just kind of go with the wind and let it blow me where I need to be next, and it kind of just works out.
Okay, so you were true to yourself, and it led you to where you are now.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I never was always true to myself. I mean, I tried to fit in with the system. I was very jealous of people who could sit in. I always thought there was something wrong with me, the fact that I couldn't have these incredibly inane conversations that people used to have and seemed to enjoy themselves and find interest in this stuff they were talking about, which was usually just what was on the television or what they had for lunch or something completely ridiculous, you know. And they always told me I was too serious. And I thought, well, hang on, no, I'm just kind of looking at the world and you know, can't you guys see that there's something terribly wrong here? And, you know, I always knew there was something terribly wrong. You know, and the further I've gone down my path, I mean, there are degrees of awakening. I mean, I awoke when I was very young. When I was 4 years old, I was awake that something was terribly wrong. But even in that, I mean, you go down these rabbit holes, you start to ask why, and you start to try to find reasons why. I mean, for me, it was ancient history. That's what got me, in, you know, my first entry into the rabbit hole was ancient history. You go down that pathway, and you realize that everything they've told us is wrong, and you think, well, they can't not be seeing what I'm seeing, so why aren't they mentioning it? Why isn't any of this stuff discussed or any of these other possibilities considered? So you begin, and then you start finding so much of it, it's quite literally overwhelming how much is wrong with ancient history. So you think, well, obviously they're not missing it, so that means they're covering it up. So why are they covering it up? Why would they be hiding history from us? And then you start thinking, well, if it's a cover-up, well, what else has been covered up? And, of course, you know, going down that rabbit hole, you go down the ET rabbit hole, all the sorts of stuff. You end up in the government, you know, corruption rabbit hole, and you realize that everything's a lie, and that all government is really is basically a big criminal family which is controlling the flow of information to people and controlling the lives of people, every single aspect of their lives. You know, government is not our friend, and, you know, it all kind of leads to that. So, you know, I became an activist and started trying to point out to people the fact that, you know, we don't actually need government. Who do these people think they are? And, you know, even under their legal system, they're all in breach of their own legal system anyway. So obviously there is no law. So perhaps we should revert to natural law and realize that all the problems that we have as a society are all in place and all happen because they're legislated to be that way. So that's what I started talking about, and that's what I started trying to bring to people's attention, you know. But again, there are degrees of awakening, because even when you look at that, you know, you start looking at ancient history and what's really going on. And recently I've discovered all sorts of stuff about ancient history, which has caused me to rethink everything that I'd learned up to that point. And I'm talking up to about, you know, 3 or 4 months ago. You know, I was in Holland, and I've got a friend in Holland who started telling me about certain things that have happened in Europe. I started investigating this, and then I started thinking about the book that I'd written in 2005, trying to examine what happened in history, just pointing out that everything we've been told is wrong. But even when I wrote that, I mean, I was considering the timeline that we're given, that all these things actually happened, you know, in the timeline that we're given. You know, admittedly, a lot of that is wrong. They will tell us that the pyramids are built, you know, 4,500 years ago. You've got people like Graham Hancock say it's 10,500 years ago. So I was taking all of that stuff into account, and perhaps they were, but the question is, when did they become ruined? And it may not have been that long ago at all. And in fact, history may be vastly different to even what I thought a year ago. So it's caused me to rethink everything, some information that's happened in the last few months. I've been talking about it on the shows recently, the mud flood that's gone across Europe. There seems to be traces of it in the United States, I'm hearing from people as well. So there's a lot of stuff that's come out in the last year to 6 months, which has caused me to rethink everything. So getting to another level of awakening now, I think.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us some other examples of false history that you stumbled upon or that you were able to uncover?
Well, the mud flood has led me to question everything. And when you really start thinking about it, nothing that we know about history does appear to be correct at all when you really start looking at it. I mean, when I was in South America and I was looking at a lot of the ruins down there, one of the things that struck me instantly was how fresh the ruins are, how fresh they look. All the stonework looks to be quite new, quite recent. You know, we're talking hundreds of years, not thousands of years. And the same in a lot of the ruins in Rome. You look at some of the buildings in Rome, some of the old buildings that have fallen down. You can go and see the government buildings in Washington, and they're kind of the same. They're built on, you know, the same template, Roman style, what we're told is Roman. And they don't really look any more eroded than the ones in Rome. Well, the ones in Rome don't really look any more eroded than the ones in Washington. They look like they were built at roughly the same time. It's just the ones in Rome have been destroyed. Like there's been something happened there which wiped the city out. What that was is an interesting question. But, you know, none of the timeline and none of the stuff that we've got here, I mean, even with the United States, you think about it. The United States, Columbus discovered in 1492, and then all this stuff happened, blah, 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 founded in 1776. When did construction really start? When was that big California rush that happened and everyone ran to California and claimed their land and San Francisco was founded and all that? What year was that? Do you know offhand?
Oh, being I don't. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that must be a couple of hundred years ago, maybe 300 years ago, maybe 400 years ago. I mean, at the most. But, you know, we can look at early pictures of San Francisco, artist depictions and photographs that came out, sepia photographs, and you've got basically – you know, what began as a small western town and grew to the great city of San Francisco.
Maybe, you know, it was like 78, 76.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
But it started off as kind of a small Western town, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it did.
Like we're told. So as this is developing into the city of San Francisco, and the buildings are being replaced with new buildings, and new buildings are being replaced with new buildings, and things are getting older, and new buildings are built, it becomes this big city. During that process, when did the sewer system get put in place? It's that huge underground cavernous sewer system in San Francisco. But did they plan that when it was a little western town that they needed to build all these caverns in? Because this is quite old, all this stuff, and the city's all built on top of it. And it would have cost a fortune to do all of that brickwork. There's so much brickwork down there, so many tunnels and passages. It's like a scene out of Batman down there, you know. When was all that done? Is there any record of that being done anywhere? How long has this place actually been there? Because all we know is that which exists within living memory. And there appears to be a lot of ancient works throughout the United States, ancient road works, ancient canal systems, all sorts of stuff around Florida Keys and around the Everglades. There's all sorts of stuff that really looks like it's man-made and looks like there was a civilization that existed before this one that existed not too long ago, and that history was rewritten as recently, sometime between the 1700s and the 1900s. History was completely rewritten, and that everything prior to that is fabricated. All the dates are out. Everything is wrong. And, you know, even when you look at it, you know, the invention of the book and the printing press and all of this sort of stuff, back in the, you know, the days 100 years ago, not everybody could read. So, you know, we didn't have access to a lot of information. Everyone just knew stuff that was word of mouth. You know, there wasn't a lot of reading. There wasn't a lot of education as far as the written word goes. And then the books got invented, and suddenly we've got access to all these books. We're all taught to read, and in these books we're given this history, represented this history, which is just what's written in the books. But how do we know any of it's true? How do we know any of it is true at all? So, and when you look at what's going on around the world, we don't know anything is true. We don't know anything about all this, these ancient ruins, any of this stuff. All we know is what's written in these books. So they give us this completely false history, and we all just believe it because it's written in the books. But what is it? Is it true? None of the monuments, none of the artifacts all around the world indicate that any of it is true. And really, when you look at it, it looks like all of these artifacts were built contemporaneously. It looks like there was a civilization that existed on this earth possibly around about 300 years ago, 400 years ago, that was a worldwide civilization, and that they have simply invented history. They've inserted at least 1,000 years into our history, like the Dark Ages, and they've done this in order to justify the existence of government, so we can see this gradual progression growing up to what government is now, when really it appears to have only been in place for a short while. There's other research I've come across. Like when I started looking at this mud flood, it really intrigued me, because in Holland, there's buildings that have got like 12 feet of mud that are covering these buildings, and they've just lifted the road system up and put in a whole new road system and all this stuff and pretended that it didn't happen, you know. So what's going on there? Why don't we know about this? And they're digging buildings out to put in a building in the middle of them. They're finding a level below ground with windows and doors and rooms and everything, like, and nobody knows about it. So what happened? Why don't we know about this? And these are buildings that have dates on them that are like 1648 and 1646. And all these towns in this, buildings in the town I was in, Harlem, have got dates on them. The whole town was apparently built around the 1600s. But when you look at the dates don't have 1646. It'll have J646 or I646. And it's an I with a dot above it. So you know it's an I. So that isn't really 1646. It's really I646. So the date is really 646. So there's all sorts of evidence to indicate they've added 1,000 years to our history, that this thing happened around about 646. So the United States, if it was founded by Columbus at all, which I doubt, if it was discovered by Columbus, which I really doubt, I think that's probably all fabricated as well. I mean, we really don't know. But if that happened according to the date that they give us, well, that would have been 492. The Declaration of Independence would have been signed in, 776. And the date that we're in now would be the year 1018. according to what we're finding out. And the thing is, when I started looking into this mud flood, I started searching on YouTube and searching on Google to find any other people that had done it. I found all these other people that have come to this same conclusion, that there's been this huge flood that's may possibly been even a worldwide flood, and that it's happened sometime in the last 400 to 500 years, possibly as recently as 100 or 200 years ago, and that they've added 1,000 years to our history. And then I found a guy called Anatoly Fomenko, a Russian guy who'd written a book in Russian apparently in 1990, I think, and it's just recently been translated into English, so I've just been able to access a copy of this book. Now, he's a mathematician that started going through looking at major historical events that have been given to us and comparing them with the eclipses and all sorts of things that are mentioned in these events, such as the Battle of Troy, the crucifixion, all sorts of things. There's references in the Bible. There's references in all of these texts which give mention eclipses and all sorts of planetary alignments and all this sort of stuff. So he went back tracing all when these eclipses and alignments were possible and figured out that none of them are possible on the dates that we're given, and they all seem to have happened within the last 1,000 years. And he puts the Battle of Troy as being around about 1300, 1350. He puts the Christ figure as having existed around about what we would call 1120 AD, all sorts of things like this. So it appears that the war that was fought, the War of Genghis Khan, the Battle of Troy, the Crusades, all of these things were fought contemporaneously, and they were fought sometime within the last 1,000 years. And they were very possibly the battle that has led us to this slavery system that we're in now. The battle, whatever happened that put this system of government in place, which is now leading us into this smart grid, which is the final lockdown, the final control. But, you know, everything we've been told is wrong. And something has happened to this earth, something's happened to us, and the earth is being mined. It's been completely stripped mined, and it's been going on for a long time. On a huge, huge, massive scale, all of our continents have been mined. All the deserts appear to have been created through mining. Antarctica has been heavily mined. Australia, America, Europe, all of these places have been heavily mined. Huge, huge mining operations. There have been civilizations.
What are they mining? Sorry to interrupt, but what are they mining?
Well, everything, I think. Everything. I think the world is vastly, vastly different to what we believe. It depends on how much people are prepared to look at and how prepared they are to think outside the box with all of this. But I think everything, crystals, gold, silver, platinum, everything of value is being taken. You know, I've often asked this question. This is something that I asked in my film, The Awakening. You know, why is the earth being strip mined? What are we doing with all of this stuff that we pull out of the earth? Because we don't seem to be using it in these little prefab throwaway societies that we've got. But when you really start considering that history has changed, and that there appears to be some form of cataclysm, whether they're constructed cataclysms or whether they are natural cataclysms that possibly happen every few hundred years, and we're simply not being told the truth about anything. And even like I was saying, when you look at books, this has been an interesting program, the way they've done this, because you know, 100 years ago, whatever, not many people could read. We didn't have books. And suddenly they introduce books and they promote them as being something of great value to achieve knowledge. You need books. You know, even when television comes out, we had films such as Network come out saying, look, we're all messed up because everyone gets their information from television. Not enough people read books, you know. So I really wanted to promote people reading books. And people have read them and they've got all this history. They consider themselves to be highly knowledgeable. But now we're seeing the libraries disappearing and books are being digitized. And through the internet, again, they've encouraged everybody to write books. And the people who did write books that were of value and of worth, people such as Nikola Tesla, people such as Royal Raymond Rife, Victor Schauberger, people like this, very often it's very hard to find their books. It's easy to find other books who've written books about them and got their opinion of what these people are saying, but very difficult to find books of the original author. So a lot of this stuff has been kind of washed away and hidden, and the books are always changed and rewritten, and a few words, subtle changes to the words and things just to change the meaning of the books. And it's encouraged everybody to write the books, and there's books everywhere, millions and millions of books, and nobody knows where the real information is. And now it's all being digitized, and all of the information that we've got, all the learning, we don't learn it in school anymore. You can go and get a book on that topic if you want to do that. I mean, it has all been digitized. And you look at the book burnings that happened, you know, over the centuries that we're told about, you know, all the information was burnt. And back in those days, it was only the scribes and the priests who could write. So they used to copy the books and they'd give you a new book, a new version. And the new version would always be slightly different to the old version. Then be a book burning. And, oh my God, thank God the scribes had copied the books for us. So at least we've got the copies, you know, so we've still got the information. But what did they change? You know, and what was the book burning really about? You know, so they've done this, and now with digitizing the whole lot, now they've got everybody to put all of their information into the computer realm, and now they're going to burn all of that. All they've got to do is shut people out of the internet to burn all of that information, and we lose all of our knowledge anyway. Now, they give us this great reverence for books. We think that these are the be-all and end-all, and then we digitize it all, and then they take it away. Even when the digital readers are coming out, the first digital reader that came out, what was it called? Remember that?
Oh my goodness, Kindle. It's escaping. Kindle. There was one just before it, but it could be Kindle.
Kindle. You start the fire with Kindle. And what's on fire, right? Once Amazon, you start crediting points and all this sort of stuff. Now, I even tell you, Kindle and fire, you know, they're starting the flame and now they're burning the whole lot. That's where we're going. But the books have been deceptive anyway, because they've given us a false history, but they've created this reverence in us for books, and they've hidden all the real ones and gotten rid of them, just stolen them from libraries and burnt them. There was a whole mandate. There was a CIA mandate. I mean, all sorts of mandates of government agencies to just go into libraries and find books, borrow them out, and just don't return them. Just don't return them. Just make sure they disappear. So, you know, this has happened to a lot of books, a lot of the real information, and all the real information has become digitized anyway, so we're going to lose it anyway. But like I'm saying, getting back to history, understand that they've taken 1,000 years out of our history, and that government is a recent addition to the human experience, and that every problem that we've got is legislated to be that way, is a pretty empowering thing to think of. You know, when you think of the concept of civilizations such as Atlantis or whatever people want to call it, and people would think, well, this was an island that sunk. I would suggest that it was more of a worldwide culture, and that there are sunken ruins all over the earth beneath the oceans, you know, off the coast of Japan, off the coast of Indonesia, all through the Mediterranean, the Bimini Wall. There's all sorts of places. There's you know, sunken ruins everywhere. So something very, very big happened, and the world is very, very different to what we're being told. And, you know, the sooner people can get this into their heads, the better, because the final end game, the final lockdown is in place at the moment with this smart grid and the chemical spraying and everything that they're doing. So, yeah, but it's a huge, huge rabbit hole to go down. Probably not where you thought we were going to go with the show either, but it's just kind of where my head's at the moment with all this history stuff. Now that I've just gotten back from Europe and I've just gotten back here to Australia to decompress, I'm taking a couple of weeks off the radio show so I can just kind of sit here and sort of process all this new information that I've got, and it's leading to some pretty interesting areas.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things you referred to Tesla, here in America, I really believed, you know, he knew a way to create free energy, and that, you know, that is going to, you know, these companies, the electric companies, you know, I'm sorry, I can't speak today. Because of that, there was an opportunity for free energy, and that definitely, these corporate interests, it worked against that.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. But, He, I mean, everything is energy. He just knew the right frequencies to tap into to be able to access that which is all around us. Because everything is energy. Everything is created from energy. When you take matter down to its component parts, you get photon light and phonon sound, really. And he just knew how to harness that. So, interesting concept. But, you know, we can do that. Everybody can do that if they know the frequency. But even going beyond that, I mean, when you think of the energetic universe and what our relationship to it is, there's no reason why we should be so disconnected from the flow as what we are. There's a lot of things that have been done to disconnect us. Yeah, if you ever drank ayahuasca, I don't know, maybe some of your listeners have. I've drank ayahuasca a few times, and one of the things that I got in my ayahuasca experience was that the visions that you have during the ayahuasca experience, these aren't hallucinations, and I can absolutely confirm that from what I was seeing. I mean, this is nothing like anything that was make believe or pretend. The beings and the people that I saw standing around me were very, very real. And what I got from that was that is the real world, and that this is the dream. We're not experiencing all of reality. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on outside visible light that we should be able to experience and we should be aware of, but we're not, simply because we've been tuned that way. Something's happened to disconnect us. And, we've got to find a way of breaking the programming and find a way of getting people to step away from this system. You know, I mean, the digital age is one thing, and it's not leading us to a good place, but the system itself is the problem. And people believing that they can vote people in and vote people out, and that it's going to make a difference, and they even have to do what these people say. You know, the whole concept of governments and countries and the division that we have. I mean, I've traveled to so many places, and I've met so many people in so many different countries. I've never met anybody who wanted war. I've never met anybody who felt the need to show someone else a piece of paper to cross a border, which is simply a line on a map that somebody drew there. Now, and I can say this, and people say, oh, Max wants open borders and all sorts of stuff, but they're not looking at the bigger picture. You know, as a human race, we have no need for countries. We have no need for division. We have no need for wars. You know, war is absolutely terminally stupid and should not be allowed under any circumstances. You know, if people were sane enough to quit the military and sane enough to quit any job that supports government and sane enough to stop supporting politicians, then we'll find a way out of this. But that's really going to be the only way out. We've got to disconnect from this system completely, realize this system doesn't serve us. It's a fiction that's been put in place by what is essentially a multinational, multi-generational crime family masquerading as government in all of our countries. This is a recent addition to the human experience. All the borders are simply lines that people draw on map. Nobody wants war. Everybody just wants to be friends with everybody else and get along. And everybody's kept in a state of scarcity and in a state of fear because of the propaganda and rubbish that their government dishes out to them. And it doesn't matter what country you go to. They will tell you that it's fantastic in that country and you don't want to go anywhere else because they're having a terrible time over there. You go to Russia, they'll tell you how bad it is in the United States. It's falling apart. The dollar's crashing. Everything's bad. You don't want to go to the United States. It's all there on the brink of oblivion. You go to the United States, they'll tell you it's terrible in Russia. Everyone's repressed. Everyone's bad. It's horrible. The economy's crashing. Same thing. You know, same thing in every country. You go to France, they'll tell you how bad it is everywhere else except France. Go to Germany, they'll tell you the same thing. Go to Australia, they'll tell you the same thing. It's the same in every single country. So where is it that's good? You know, nowhere's good because government makes sure it isn't good, and they all work together to do it, and they all work together to keep their nations in fear of everybody else. And it's a scam. You know, government is a crime family. That's what it is, and we need to stop supporting these people in any way, shape, or form that we're asked to do so. That's what we need to do. You know, of course, the biggest problem we have is police. These people are completely programmed to support government, not to protect the people, not to prevent crime, not anything that they think they're doing. What they're doing is they're enforcing legislation and rules that are given to them by a crime family, all of which are designed to repress and limit the human experience. And we need to wake up to this and step away from it en masse. And until we do that, we're not really going to get any change, unfortunately. And it's attempting to help people see the worth in themselves that they are prepared to do this. You know, help to see the worth in themselves enough to see it in others and realize that we're all in this together and that it is us who holds the system up. And we can step away from it any time we choose to respect each other enough to do it. So that's been the message for the whole time, really, that I've been trying to put out to people, because I think it's important that we do. It's important that people wake up to themselves and wake up to the fact that the people around them are not their enemy, not in any country, not in any neighborhood. It doesn't matter what their skin color is. Doesn't matter what their social status is. We're all in this together. We're all being repressed by the same people and by this government, which is simply racketeering. And we've got to identify that for what it is and stop doing what we're told by this criminal cabal masquerading as government.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Agreed. What do you think about the Catholic Church and their involvement?
The Catholic Church, look, I don't agree with any religion. I really don't. And even when you start reading between the lines in the Bible and start looking at some of the stuff that the Christ figure said in the Bible, and his name wasn't Jesus because Jesus didn't exist back then, we're told. So whatever, whoever he was, whoever this character was, he appears to be very much against the church, very much against the monetary system. I would suggest that he was very much against religion itself. Even when you look at the oils that they used, the sacred oils that were used, there's every indication this was cannabis oil that was used in the Bible and all the biblical applications of oil, the sacred oil they used to burn in the huts, the healing oil that was used on people. This was cannabis oil. And he appears to have very much been in tune with nature and very much in tune with the great spirit of things, you know, what you want to call God, whatever. But I don't think it had anything to do with religion. And I think, the religionists killed him and they used him to promote everything that he stands against and stood against. And people are unfortunately waiting for this man to come back and save them when he was simply showing you the way and showing you what you could do to step away from the system yourself. Now, you don't need the church to give you salvation. You don't need the church to connect you to God, the Spirit, whatever you want to call it, because you're already connected. You don't need to have bankers and money changers and all this sort of stuff. You don't need to do it. You don't need to answer their questions. He showed you all that in the trial, you know, giving him the name that they gave him. When they say, are you this person? He said, well, do you say that I am? He didn't say that he was. He didn't make any claims. He was just showing people the way, and unfortunately people are waiting for him to come back and save them rather than simply following in those footsteps. But it works. If you follow in those footsteps, it works. You know, and I think the church and all religions are simply designed to divide people and to lead people away from God. And that's my view of all religions, whatever they pretend to be. I think they all have they're all rooted in supremacism. They're all rooted in division. It doesn't matter which religion you follow. They'll tell you need to be tolerant of everybody else and tolerant of all the other religions, but you're the ones who've got it right. So don't worry about that. You're the ones that are saved. So it automatically divides you, puts that seed of supremacism in your mind. We think you're the one who's got it all worked out, and you need to go and try to convince everybody to come and think like you do, or else they're not going to be saved. They're all going to be condemned to hell. So, you know, you condemn them and you to a life of argument and dogma, you know, rather than dealing with the surroundings around you the way the Christ figure told you to do. So I think it's all one huge deception, all of religion. I don't think any of it has anything to do with God. I don't think any of it has anything to do with freedom. And I don't think any of it has anything to do with the teachings of those who the religions are modeled after. I don't think the current version of Islam has too much to do with the real teachings of Muhammad. I don't think the Christianity has too much to do with the teachings of Christ. So that's just the way it is. That's my view on it, simply from an observation of those who adhere to those particular faiths. I don't see anybody following in the footsteps of the people who they modeled the faiths on.
You know, but many people feel that the Catholic Church is one of the powers that be, that they have a lot of control. That's kind of what I was referencing or curious about, if you feel that to be true as well.
Well, they do in the way people think, absolutely, in everything that I've just said. It all comes from there. I mean, all the whole religious dynasties come from there. And even when you look at the whole system of governance, you know, the birth certificate, the Sester KV Trust and all this sort of stuff, I'm sure they have an absolute, huge amount of control through the birth registration and all this sort of stuff. But, you know, it's only control that we give them. Mind control, people waiting to be saved, all this sort of stuff. It's only the control that we give them. But yeah, I mean, they do, especially over nations like America, which claims to be a Christian nation, which is anything but a Christian nation. A lot of these countries who claim to be particularly religious nations are anything but. And, you know, a lot of this comes from the Catholic Church. I mean, the Catholic Church inserted that line in there where you need to trust your government. They're the representative of God on earth. That was inserted by the Catholic Church. I can't remember which line it is, which chapter and verse it is. But, yeah, I mean, they do. They have a huge amount of control over people's minds. They invoke apathy in people. They cause people to sit back and wait to be saved. And I don't think that the teachings that they are presenting are anything like the character that they base their religion on.
And then, you know, know, there's wonderful teachings in theosophy. And I think you even said that somewhere between spirituality or slash religion and science is the answer.
Well, yeah, I often have thought that. But looking back, like I said, this even the mud flood has caused me to even rethink that. It's really changed my perspective of so many things. You know, back when I started doing this radio show, because I've kind of somehow I got sidetracked away from what got me started. When I first started the radio show, I had this incredible epiphany in 2008. Where I was in this state of meditation, and I had this connection to like a quantum universe. And I fell out of my chair. I don't know how long it lasted, but I experienced kind of everything. It was like I emotionally connected to everything in the quantum universe. And it was profound, and it was almost like I exploded. It was bizarre, such an incredible download. I don't know how long it lasted, a flash of a second maybe. But suddenly I was everywhere all at once. I fell out of my chair and I cried for 7.5 hours after the experience. And I realized it was an emotionally based reality, emotionally connected reality. We can manifest anything we want to with emotion. We're speaking an emotional language all the time. That life is a prayer, essentially. Everything you do is part of that prayer. And that's when I decided it would be a good idea to be a radio host to be able to present this information to people. And it's what inspired me to make the film The Awakening. And how I got the gig as a radio host was I thought, okay, it's an emotional reality. So I thought of the way a Native American would pray for rain. They'd put themselves in the emotional state where they're standing in the pouring rain. So, you know, they'd feel it, they'd taste it, and it's there. They're in the rain. And if they put themselves in that emotional state, it will bring the rain to them. You know, when you pray for rain, it's a negative affirmation. You're acknowledging that there is no rain, so it's not going to rain. When you pray for peace, you're acknowledging there is no peace. When you pray for love, you're acknowledging there is no love. If you want your perfect partner in your life, you put yourself in the emotional state where your perfect partner is already there in your life. And very soon that person will walk into your life and you'll meet them and it'll just work out. So that's the way I did it. I put myself in the emotional state where I was a radio host. You know, I didn't pretend to be a radio host or any of that sort of stuff. I just put myself in that emotional state. And within 6 weeks, I was a radio host. And I didn't do anything at all to become a radio host. It just happened. And, you know, the station that I'm on is actually a real station. You can tune in on your radio in your car and you know, watch it and listen to it. It is an internet radio. I just put myself in that state. So I might think, I'm getting off topic here, but I'm not. So somehow along the path with the 10 years of doing the radio, I kind of became more focused on all of these earthly problems that we've got and ways to empower people to deal with this. I've tried all sorts of things to motivate people on the ground, to get them, you know, getting involved in the legal system to some degree, even though it's fiction, just to even demonstrate to them that it's fiction, just get them involved. If they have some sort of a slight win, maybe that will empower them, blah, blah, blah. But it's gotten to the point where the emotional-based reality, you know, our powerful creation and manifestation is profound. It's off the charts. And I would suggest that is why our minds have been controlled. There's a lot of different life forms that exist on this earth. There's a lot of different life forms that have existed on this earth. And even when you look into some of the ancient myths, the ancient texts, stories of giants and dragons and whatever, you know, all these things are quite possible. You can find pictures of dragons on old sword blades and things. You can dug up in England, pictures of dinosaurs and brontosauruses and dragons and stuff carved into sword blades. Elongated skulls, all sorts of weird stuff, giant skeletons. I mean, there's been a lot of weird stuff found here. So, you know, our power for manifestation is profound, and I believe that is why our minds are the ones that have been controlled and been contained. And recently, I don't know whether you might have heard it, about a year ago, I did a show called Giving Life to Lucifer. Did you manage to catch that show at all?
No, I did not.
Okay, well, in that show, I talked about the internet and the whole concept of Lucifer and what it may be. And the whole concept of Lucifer and the devil and Satan and all this sort of stuff. A lot of people think of this demon with horns and a pitchfork and whatever. And I suggested that Lucifer is the bearer of light. And what is light? Light is information. You know, when you go into a room and you light a flame in that room, it gives you information about the room. You go into a dark room, you put a little bit of light in there, it gives you information about the room. It sheds light on the room, sheds light on information. So information, you know, light is information. The bearer of light, what is light? What gives us more information than anything? The internet. And if you look at the word Lucifer, Lucas, light, cipher, code. The code that bears the light. You look at the concept of scrying mirrors. Have you ever looked into witchcraft and scrying mirrors and sigils that are used to summon demons and all this sort of stuff? A scrying mirror is a black mirror that we were told will show you the future and the past. You can see anything. You can summon demons by looking into this scrying mirror, and you use it by combining these certain sigils in the right order, and it brings this scrying mirror to life, and you can summon demons. Summon Lucifer. When you look at these sigils, they look a lot like electronic components. They look like computer parts and circuit board diagrams. We don't know where electricity comes from. We don't know where the force behind the internet really comes from, this intelligence that is being created through the internet. And as we hand more power over to the internet and it becomes more autonomic, it becomes a self-regulating, self-correcting, self-balancing, self-defensive system. Then it becomes like any other life form, becomes a virtual life of its own. And scrying mirrors, these black mirrors, if you look at our computer screens, these are black mirrors, our cell phones, these are black mirrors where you can see the future and the past. You do all this sort of stuff. And I've been suggesting to people that perhaps these scrying mirrors and sigils aren't there for these little new age hippie pretend black magic people to combine sigils on their wall and think that by looking into a scrying mirror they're going to do something. They're put there as a warning to warn us that when we see these sigils in use and these scrying mirrors in use, we're about to summon this Lucifer force. You know, and then you get back to the whole concept of going back to biblical tales. And I'm not biblical, but there's a lot of truth in these. You know, I'm not religious, but there's a lot of truth in these books. There's a lot of interesting data you can get from them. You look back at the concept of the biting of the apple, the search for information. They got the bitten apple on the Mac as well, showing you what you're doing. This whole search for information, this need to know all of this stuff that science leads us to, is what creates this Lucifer system. It ultimately leads to the creation of the internet, and we hand all of our information over to it, and then it takes that information from us. It gives us all the information we need to heal things if we want to, but we don't do it. So you get to the point where the question has to be asked, why do we need to know? If we are here to create and to manifest through creation, I mean, we can spontaneously create life through sex. We can spontaneously bring a new life into being. If you look at some of the old structures and some of the things that existed on this earth, this was a very, very different earth to what we have now. And if you can understand the two concepts of what the energies are that make up reality, sure, it's photon light and phonon sound, but looking at the polarities of it, you know, positive and negative, light and dark, good and bad, good and evil, whatever you want to call it, you know, expressed as emotion, these are the extremes of love and fear. And anything that isn't love is fear. And anything that isn't fear basically is love, because all negative stuff stems from fear. So if you step out of that state of love, you're in a state of fear. And if you're in a state of love and that's all you knew, it wasn't anything else your reality, it was all you ever experienced, it wouldn't be this warm, fuzzy sort of version of love we've got. It would just be this connection to the flow. And in anything you experienced that disconnected you, you wouldn't be able to give it any name. You wouldn't know what the name fear was. It would just be something that was not love. And if you were totally in that state of fear and you experience love, it would simply be not fear. So you could really call love, you could rename it as not fear, and you could rename fear as not love. And that's the sort of way you need to think about it. So once we step out of that and we ask why, this becomes from fear. Why do you need to know? If you're in this state of ultimate creation and in the flow, why would you ever ask? Why would you ever ask? You know, if you're in that state of that moment with your lover, you don't think, wow, you're so beautiful. I love your eyes. I'll just tear that out of your head and examine it from the inside to see what makes your eyes so beautiful. You don't do that. You don't even think that. And the mere act of asking the question disconnects you straight away. You know, the analogy of you don't tear a little kitten to pieces to love it. As soon as you do that, you've disconnected yourself. As soon as you ask why with the earth, you've disconnected yourself from it. You've disconnected yourself. You've divorced yourself from nature. You've divorced yourself from the earth. Now the earth is no longer a living thing that you can use to be in the flow with and create and live in abundance. Now it is a thing to be examined, to be pulled apart, to be meticulously, you know, examined and to be categorized and cataloged and put on the shelf and to be labeled and marked. So now I know what that is. You know, we know a cat can only stay awake for 36 hours because we got one and put it in a pool and we attached electrodes to its ears and to its testicles and we allowed it so it would sit there and get an electric shock whenever its nose touched the water and it died after 36 hours. So we know that now. Aren't we informed? We needed to do that, of course. So now we know. So now we know how to protect cats. You know, this is insanity, complete and utter insanity. And it's
experimentation as well. Experimentation in general on a living creature.
Everything. See, but it's that disconnection that disconnects you from the flow. As soon as you even ask why, you no longer love. It's that extreme. And to try to bring this to people, this concept of how far the programming goes, how far the disconnection goes. I mean, sure, we all want to know why. We're in a mess. We want to know how we got here. We want to know what's going on. We're interested in stuff. But you can be interested in stuff but not have to destroy it to find out, you know, because that disconnects you. The earth can no longer be a living thing if you don't see it as a living thing. It can no longer be something that you can connect with and flow with and provide abundance to you if you divorce yourself from it. You know, you're sitting under the tree. You want to know how old the tree is, so you cut it down and measure the rings. Why? Because now you can't sit under the tree. The tree's gone. Now you don't have any shade. Why can't you just enjoy the shade of the tree? And what can you learn by smelling a flower rather than plucking it and pulling it apart and examining it from the inside out? Why do you need to do that? Why do we need to do any of this stuff? You know, so why do we even need science? How does science serve us? Science is simply the disconnection and divorce from nature. It's the divorce from all ceremony, the divorce from the prayer of life. You know, of life being a prayer, you know. And somewhere along the line through the radio show, I got disconnected from all of that. I got disconnected from, you know, this flow that I was in, which even caused me to create the radio show and create the film The Awakening and create all this stuff that I created. You know, I realized there was a process. Okay, I want people to understand about this emotional language and about this flow, so I need to show them the system to try to bring them out of that system, which is what I tried to do with The Calling and The Awakening and leading into Transformation. But then I haven't made a film in the last 6 years since I made Transformation because I've been out there, you know, being active. I mean, when I went into Gaza Strip and I saw the humanitarian disaster, the catastrophe that is Gaza Strip, I saw this incredible need to try to heal that situation. It became so real for me and so human for me that I became more of a government activist. And I, even though all that is important, I still stepped away from the bigger picture of the flow and how imperative it is for us to break this programming and break free of this psychological matrix that we're in. And being becoming alerted to this mud flood in Europe and the fact that our history is completely and utterly different to what even I thought it was has really kind of made me step back and re-examine my entire path up to this point. And I can kind of see where that sidestep was kind of made, where I was pushed into this more examining more of the physicality rather than looking at the bigger picture and need to step back into the flow and to break this programming. I mean, there's no remedy to be found in anything government's going to offer us. And there's no remedy to be found in the situation, in any of this situation, until mankind is prepared to simply stop what they're doing and step away from this system. And that's what I was trying to bring people back in the beginning. And so that's what I'm getting more focused on now. Because it really has it's caused me to see how easy we could actually do this as well. I mean, if history has been rewritten as recently as possibly even the 19th century, then yeah, this is only a few hundred years ago. We were not in this situation. Things were completely and utterly different. And certainly 1,000 years ago, things were completely and utterly different, absolutely different world to what we have now. And even when you look at the concepts such as the Vedas and the Vedic culture that we're given, the Ramayana and all these books, we assume this to be millennia ago, and perhaps it was. But who's to say it wasn't that way right up until perhaps 1,000 years ago? You know, and why can't we get that back? I mean, sure, they've done a lot of damage. There has been huge mining operations. There's been so much resources stolen from this world now that it will probably take a long time to get it back. But with our power of creation and our power of manifestation, our collective power of creation, if we can free ourselves from this mind matrix that we're in, I think we could probably restore things far more rapidly than we could ever imagine.
We have a station break. Stay with me, Max, and we'll be right back.
Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslip.com, the People Station.
Will you fight? No! We will run! And we will live!
Shame on you! Be the greatest night of our lives, but you're gonna let it be the worst.
And I guarantee a week won't go by in your life you won't regret walking out, letting them get the best of you.
Well, I'm not going home.
We've got too far,
and I'm gonna stay right here and fight for this lost cause.
A day may come when the courage of men fails, but it is not this day.
The line must be drawn here. This far, no farther.
I'm not saying it's going to be easy.
You're going to work harder than you ever worked before.
But that's fine. We'll just get tougher with it.
If a person grits his teeth and shows real determination,
failure is not an option.
That's how winning is done.
Believe me when I say
we can break this army here
and win just one for the Gipper.
But I say to you, what every warrior has known since the beginning of time,
you've got to get mad.
I mean plumb mad dog mean.
If you would be free men, then
and you must fight to fulfill that promise. Let us
cut out their living guts
1 inch at a time.
And they will know what we can do.
Let no man forget how menacing we are. We are lions.
You're like a big bear, man.
This is your time.
Seize the day.
Never surrender.
Victory or death.
That's the Chicago.
Who's with me?
Claire! Don't let him die! Claire!
All right, let's fly!
And gentlemen in England, now abed, shall know my name is the law!
But I tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take
our Independence Day!
Revolution Radio, freedomsynth.com. One world coming together to bring freedom home. You don't need to expect us. We're already here. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm here with Max Egan, and we're discussing ancient history and much more. So we're returning back to our conversation prior to the break.
Welcome back. Nice to be back.
So, you know, we're going into some really interesting areas, and I know that, you know, my listeners appreciate the kind of information you have to give. So we were talking, you know, basically about kind of this new awakening, these phases of awakenings, your awakening that you yourself are experiencing. So let's see where we can go with that. So where else are you in this new awakening of yours, in this new level of understanding?
Well, like I said, I'm kind of revisiting, you know, what got me started on this path and the need to completely step away from this system altogether. You know, with the rollout of this 5G and the social crediting and all the stuff that's going on, I mean, people really need to pay attention to this and also to the chemical spraying. This is something that, you know, Western countries have really got to pay attention to. The cognitive dissonance in the chemical spraying is absolutely mind-boggling. You know, people just thinking it's jet exhausts. I would suggest these people get out and travel a little bit, because if you go to Asia, you go to the Middle East, you go to anywhere that isn't a Western nation, and you'll find that there's no spraying in the sky. You know, there's no jet exhausts in the sky. It's all white European Western nations, Canada, all of Europe, Australia, New Zealand, all of these countries are being sprayed heavily, but it's not happening in other countries. So people need to pay attention to that as well. I mean, you know, we've got a criminal cabal running this place. People need to understand that the reason they're in a state of scarcity is because it's legislated to be that way. And we've got to collectively step away from the system. So I'm just encouraging anything that we can do to put awareness into people, any stand you can take, whether it's a legal stand, legal action, anything you can put to put a spanner in the works and slow them down, just to let them know that you're paying attention. And like I said, I don't expect to find any complete legal remedy, but we can at least slow the system down. Things like the Empower movement have been having great success stopping smart meters. But, you know, we've got to pay attention to what's happening. We can't allow this smart grid to roll out. I'd like to see everyone put down their mobile phones. I don't think that's going to happen, but I'd love to see that happen. I've been encouraging that for a long time, to not use smartphones. You know, look at the etymology of the word smart. You know, there's no relation to the word intelligence in the word smart. If you look at the etymology, it's not based in intellect. It's based in pain. So they kind of tell you what they're doing. It's like with the Kindle and the Kindle reader and the Amazon Fire. They tell you they're burning all the knowledge. And with smart is based, you know, when something hurts, it's smart. If you look up the etymology of it and why it was ever started to be used as intelligence is the concept of being sharp as a whip, because a whip hurts, it smarts. And so someone quick as a whip, so it became quick-witted and became construed to be intelligent, but really it's about pain. So when you get a smart device, it's a pain device. It's a device that is being used to monitor you, to track you, and to also cause pain. This whole 5G system is an active denial system. It's a defense weapons system, really. Not only a communication system, they can use it to target people. They can use it to create active denial zones all around the world. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting thing that we're looking at, and it's a smart system. Think about the word smart. You know, I'm getting a smart device. What's it for? It's to cause pain. Smart, yeah, smart meters to cause pain. These are not good for us. And plus, they're going to track everything we do and everything we say. Last year, there was someone arrested in Australia because their fridge was listening to them over breakfast and didn't like what they said. They said something illegal, and the police came and swooped on them and prevented some crime that was about to be committed, you know, pre-crime. And it was all perfectly legal. And what's it going to be like once you've got your clock radio listening to you in bed, and you've got your refrigerator listening to you, and your toaster listening to you, and everything is listening to you? And if it doesn't like what you say, it puts some black marks against your name and removes your social crediting points, like they've done in China.
So and over the whole social TVs, I mean, the TVs have two-way cameras, and you can find that online. Samsung. Actually, people have discovered it, you know, by taking TVs apart. And so there's been online a big outrage about this. And so, you know, it's been going on since 2002, 2003, and it's maybe part of the Patriot Act. You know, maybe they started doing it because of the Patriot Act here in the States. And it's frightening. Makes you afraid to walk around in your own house.
Well, they've been doing it ever since they brought out cable TV. That's what cable TV was all about. Mm. So you could put a monitoring box in people's home. That's why it's cable. That's what the quick connection is all about. It's so they can look at you, not so you can watch good TV. It's so they can look what you're doing and monitor what you're doing. And recently there was an Alexa. Someone had an Alexa in their home, and it recorded a conversation that they had, a woman had with her husband, and it sent it to the husband's boss. Just randomly thought, oh, you wanted me to record this and send it to your boss. You know, and the boss ended up ringing them back and saying, hey, I've just got this 32-minute conversation that your Alexa sent me of you and your husband discussing stuff over breakfast or whatever. And so these things are monitoring everything everybody does, and they're sending the information to whoever. You know, so this is extremely dangerous. And when you look at the social crediting system that I've got in China, you know, it's getting to a point, and they've got facial recognition glasses in China as well. And it'll get to the point where the algorithms will simply be monitoring you, what you say. And if they don't like what you say, then they'll be lowering your reputation all the way through the algorithms, put a black mark against your name, limit your social crediting points, and suddenly you go to buy a plane ticket and you find that you're not able to because you've been blacklisted. You're not eligible. You're not qualified for a certain plane ticket or a train ticket or whatever. And there's no appeal process. And they've done this in China. They're monitoring people that are crossing, jaywalking and stuff, you know, not dealing with, the no walk signs and walk signs at intersections. If they're going against the no walk sign, they video them and they put their face up at the local bus shelter to shame them in front of all the population. And they put a little black mark against their name. And people who get, accumulate enough black marks and get their social crediting points limited are deemed untrustworthy, and once you're deemed untrustworthy, then you're never considered trustworthy again. You can never get your credit points back. And people that are deemed untrustworthy are prevented from doing things like buying airline tickets, buying train tickets, or renting houses. So you immediately get ostracized. If you don't think the way the government likes or whatever, you post something on Facebook the government doesn't like, they limit your social crediting power, there's no appeal process, and you basically get criminalized by default because you become an undesirable. You can't rent a house or anything anywhere. Of course, it's illegal to be homeless. And the government has these the police have these facial recognition glasses. So the algorithm could effectively say, well, Ella has just limited her. She's just said one thing too many, wrong. We've got to put a black mark against her name now, and she's out shopping, so we'll just limit her purchasing power, and we'll send the information to the nearest police officer who will see, oh, there's Ella. He can pick her out of the crowd with his facial recognition glasses, and her penalty would already be determined by the algorithm because we don't need a trial anymore. The algorithm is determining what your social crediting points are, so they can go and arrest you and get you off the street and put you into the smart prison, and you'll just disappear. It's as simple as that. That's the way it's going. through this whole social crediting system that they're bringing in. So,
and here, you know, in the States, got, I don't know if you're, oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, they've got stuff now in China. They bring in school kids as soon as they're 5 years old and they start school. They've got cameras on every child's face, and it's taking a snapshot of their face every 2 minutes, and it's registering their expressions and registering their emotional state every 2 minutes. So it's socially profiling them. If they look like they're a daydreamer, if they look like they're attentive or whatever, if they look like they're restless and they want to do other things. So it starts to funnel them into certain classes and certain activities right from when they're 5 years old by monitoring them every 2 minutes. So, you know, they're doing this and trialing it all out in China, but it's coming everywhere. It's coming right across the world. So this is the way we're going with this smart system if people allow themselves to just be led into it. And we're being led into it under the guise of convenience is the problem. You know, people just think it's convenient. All these personal assistants to do all these things for them. They're forgetting how to do anything for themselves.
That
they're
is
even forgetting
true.
How to communicate to themselves, you know. And we're seeing in the Philippines, for example, where children have always gotten along fine. Now there's families and kids are starting to develop social problems with each other through texting to each other because you don't get all of the expression when you're texting. You take things way too seriously in text. You know, like 90% of communication is nonverbal anyway. And when it's not even verbal, it's text. Well, how much of the communication are you actually getting of what the person actually means? You're not getting their tone of voice, look in their eye, their body language or anything. So you don't really know what's being said to you at all. And people are starting to develop social problems through texting and technology. And that's what it's all been about. And it's all been about leading us into this system. And, like I said, if you go and listen to that show, Giving Life to Lucifer, I really think I nailed it in that show of where we're going and what this whole quest for knowledge has led to and why really science is, you know, I've always, like you say, you know, the marriage of spirituality and science, I always thought that we'd find the line between the two. But that was because I always believed, you know, knowledge is power and all this sort of stuff. And yeah, it is, but the right knowledge and the right knowledge cannot be found in books. The right knowledge cannot be found in science. The right knowledge cannot be found in religion. The right knowledge can only be found inside you, can only be found in your heart. It can only be found in your connection to who and what you are and your connection to the flow around you. That is really the only truth there is, you know, and that flow around you is love. It's that energetic state. You know, it's just that we think love is this warm, fuzzy thing, you know, when really love is simply the opposite of fear. So it all comes back to that, you know. So, yeah, that's the dilemma that we find ourselves in. It's a complete paradox, you know, because we need knowledge to find our way out of this mess. But it's this quest for knowledge that got us into this mess to begin with.
Yeah,
that's what
life connected. Is a paradox. That's one thing I've witnessed. It just seems to be one big paradox.
Well, life is a paradox and it's constructed to be that way. But, until people, understand that the remedy lies within themselves and it lies in disconnecting from this fictional matrix, this mind prison that they believe is real, you know, this
Do you think
authority
activism makes a difference?
Is real.
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Well, it depends on the activism.
Like going to the senators here in the States and protesting and doing all these things that me and so many people that I know have done, like trying to fight the system. We wrote letters against 5G. We knew that can be weaponized. You know, the group of people that I know are very much awake and have had so many experiences due to the government or, you know, there's so many things that can be weaponized at this point, and it's very frightening. And so we have done so much work fighting the system. It hasn't always worked, but we're hoping to at least to awaken some of these people ourselves, to give them enough information to question what's going on. Maybe they're unaware, so we're hoping to maybe enlighten them as to what is really going on, even as a representative of our country or a servant for us, an elected servant for us.
Well, the thing is, you know, all you can really hope to do with that sort of action is to awaken the people around you to the fact that you will find no remedy in government. Because the problem is that even attempting to do that, you're attempting to appeal to these people's better judgment, to their empathy, to their sympathy, to all these sorts of human qualities which they simply don't possess. And even if they do possess them, if they are in any position to make any decision at all, then they're compromised. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there. So they're not going to help you. You know, we don't ask the right questions in any of those situations. Like, for example, you know, we constructed a legal system. We constructed all of this stuff to prevent the causation of harm and to provide remedy when that harm is caused. That's what we're told anyway. That's what we have law for. But all the government does is cause harm. You know, when you don't comply with the government's wishes, they'll send men in uniforms around to beat you up and put you in a cage. That is causing harm. So what gives them the right to do that? They say they get their right from the people. You know, the government, any democratically elected government gets the rights delegated to it by the people, but I can't come and tell you to walk between my lines, and if you don't, I put you in a cage. I can't do that. So how can I delegate that power to you? I can't. You made it up. So you are an abuse of the office that you hold by delegating yourself powers you have no right to have, and your powers are causing harm. And we created a legal system to prevent the causation of harm. So can you show cause why you should not be held in abuse of office and removed for the harm that you're causing? You know, we don't ask questions like that. You know, and even bring it back to Israel. You know, and again, if it doesn't matter whether you support the Palestinians or the Jews, it's a moot point. The point is the fact that if law is real and all this paper-based reality, all this stuff they write down on paper is real, then according to the Geneva Convention, the very existence of Gaza Strip is a massive war crime, and any politician who supports it is a war criminal anyway. So, you know, if you're an American politician and you sign the AIPAC Treaty, which means you're in open support of international war crimes, so can you show cause why any of your legislation is valid? Because it's against the law to support war crimes. Again, it doesn't matter which side you support, collective punishment is a war crime. It's not acceptable. You know, so you people are criminals even under your own law. So if I can't prosecute you for your crimes and I can't prosecute you for causing harm against the community with this 5G rollout that you're doing, then thank you for confirming to the world that there is no law. And we need to revert to natural law. And natural law says that people will be held accountable for the actions and they will face the consequences of their actions. And the consequences of your actions are that we are angry and we are now going to remove you from office. We'll go put you on Christmas Island with all the other politicians. We'll give you all a hammer and you can all have your war. But we won't participate anymore because we've figured out that you're just a bunch of criminals and we're not going to do what you say. And that's what needs to happen. And that is the only remedy. Someone needs to get up, go to one of those meetings and stand up in a government house and say that to one of the politicians and see what they do. They will backpedal out of that room faster than you can flick a switch. They will be out of there. You know, that's what needs to happen. You know, we've got a crime gang running the world that makes stuff up as they go along. They delegate themselves powers that they have no right to have, and we simply ask them if they will be nicer slave masters, please. We petition them for softer shackles. It's a joke. These people are criminals. They have no right to doing what they're doing. And we never call it. We never ask the right questions. We petition them. We appeal to their humanity. They don't have any. If they did have any, they wouldn't be there. And if they did have any humanity when they entered into it, then they got compromised as soon as they got voted in. That's why they're in there. You know, and we've
or
got
their hands are tied. You know, they're an outlier and they're just, their hands are tied. They can't do anything.
Well, they've been caught with an underage prostitute, an underage girl or whatever, and they've got them on video, and that's the way they do it. They brownstone every one of these people. You know, if anybody who is groomed for office is compromised before they even get there, otherwise they don't get the position. Until we're prepared to admit that, we're not going to get anywhere. We need to factor that into everything we're doing, that the world is run by criminals and everything they are going to do is going to prevent us from doing anything about it. And the legal system has been created to create all sorts of red tape and stuff that will take months and months on end to get anything through and so that they get away scot-free. That's what the legal system's for, is to protect the politicians and to tie us up in red tape if we ever try to do anything about it. And people need to stand up and call it for what it is. These people are not your friends. They're not your rulers. They're not your servants. They're not your employees. They're a crime gang, and we have no need for them. They're racketeering. That's all they're doing, and we need to call it for what it is.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Definitely agreed. What's your opinion on – I mean, I can imagine what your opinion is. What do you think about our president?
Oh, look, he's a puppet in a long line of puppets. He's not going to do a damn thing. Of course he's not. If he was, he wouldn't be there. And it's been one big puppet show since he started. He's not calling anything out for what it is. I can't believe that anyone thinks they're going to get any change from it. They're not. It's just more theater for the masses.
It is. I was just going to say that. You answer a lot of my questions. It is. It's such a distraction from what we really need to be paying attention to.
It is, and so is all the QAnon stuff. You know, got people sitting back waiting. It's all 4D chess. Sit back and wait till November. Wait till November? November? Oh, my Lord, you know. What's going to be happening in November? The smart grid will be just about online by November, you know. It's theater for the masses, this whole North Korea posturing. North Korea is this big CIA front anyway. It's a puppet show. The whole thing's a puppet show. Donald Trump is just another puppet in a long line of puppets. He's not going to do a thing. The fact that Hillary Clinton is not in jail, the fact that DynCorp is still running things, all this human trafficking still going on, bombing foreign countries, nothing has changed. It's the same agenda, moving the embassy to Jerusalem to just basically condemn the Palestinian people. You know, it's just more of the same. He's actually gotten away with a lot more than what any other president could have gotten away with, I think, because so much of the independent media has been believing it's some sort of weird 4D chess that he's playing, and eventually it's all going to come good. And it's not. It's just more of the same. It's a joke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of people did think because he was so different, because he was so opinionated, and he seemed to be against the establishment, I think a lot of people had a lot of hope for him.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, some of the stuff that he said about 9/11, but he's backflipped on all of it. You know, he questioned 9/11 years ago, but as soon as he got into office, he didn't worry about it. You know, and look at who he's been surrounding himself with. You know, it's a joke. I don't know why people can't see it. It's just, yeah, it's more. I mean, it doesn't matter. There's no remedy to be found. It doesn't matter who you'd put in there. You put Bozo the Clown in there. You put a piece of toast in there. Put a potato in there. It wouldn't make any difference at all. It's the same agenda, just marching steadily forward. Slightly different changes to keep people appeased on the ground, but it's the same agenda. Nothing ever changes.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. So what about taking care of ourselves? Let's maybe flip to the positive, what we can do to enjoy this, you know, this sensory world that we live in. You know, I think, you know, it is a perceptual reality, and I've heard you say that as well. And, you know, studying theosophy and theology, and even some of the New Age, you start to think that. And I kind of personally believe it's a holographic universe. But so, you know, I think that there are things we can do to enjoy this experience, and you know that as well. I mean, this is a beautiful world despite, you know, what's going on. It's falling apart quickly, but I do think we need to appreciate what we do have. And on some level, some physical level, I'd like to believe that we can make a difference.
Well, we can, you know, lead by example in all that you do. I mean, I spend my life giving to all that I can, and through that, I'm able to travel all over the world, and I've got family everywhere. I can stay in so many countries with people, and just through giving, just having that type of a giving sort of a personality and seeing people as yourself and stepping away from this system. I mean, that's one thing we can do. We've really got to do that. I've never involved myself in the system. So, you know, it is quite easy to do if you're prepared to give to others and give unconditionally to people. The universe will guide you. I really believe that. As far as what we can do, you know, health-wise against this system, be aware of what you're consuming. Be aware of the nanotech and everything. Be aware there's nanotech and all the GM food you're getting. Most of the stuff you get from supermarkets, you know, just isn't edible. We can do things like iodine. Take iodine. Recently, I did a talk in L.A., San Diego, called Regeneration with Benny Wills, and Sophia Smallstorm was one of the speakers there. And it was great to actually meet her and see her speak. And she was talking about iodine and magnesium and things like this. Really, really good prevention against chemtrails and all that sort of stuff against the nanotech. The iodine is one of the things that we're very, very depleted in that we just don't get told about. And that's really good for maintaining your health and balance. Things like that. But just maintaining your positivity and realizing that all isn't over, you know. Like even, like I was saying earlier, with this mud flood and all this sort of stuff, realizing that the world was very different just a few hundred years ago, this whole government system hasn't been in place for very long at all. This is a very, very empowering sort of thing to think about. You know, the concept that it wasn't this gradual progression over the last couple of thousand years from Sparta and Rome and all of this stuff that happened. None of that happened the way we were told. Very, very likely there was no Roman civilization. There was no Roman Empire. Very likely all this stuff was created more recently. And it wasn't even an empire like we think it was. It wasn't a system that had any system of governments in place. We didn't need that. You know, we live in a world of abundance, and you're surrounded by abundance. The government is the one that manufactures the scarcity for you. And if you choose to put all that down and respect yourself enough to respect people around you, then you will make a difference. You know, and even with all the information that people bring out to you and share to you, you know, so much of it is fear-based. And sure, there's a lot to be concerned about with what's going on. There's a lot that's coming down the pike that we really don't want. But we don't have to do it. We can stand up against it by simply asking the right questions. Like I said, it's all causing harm anyway. And isn't that what the legal system's for? So even asking these questions can make a difference. You know, if you've got to go into some sort of a courtroom situation, speak for yourself and ask the questions. Because all you're trying to do is prevent the causation of harm. And if government is causing harm, then why do we need government? But, you know, when you bring in this information to people, often we are in a state of fear. We are sort of screaming out that the sky is falling and all this sort of stuff. And we could be far more positive about things. We could be, you know, a shining light in our community and lead by example in what we do and allow others to see that you are better because you have this information. You're a more positive person. You're a more empowered person. You're a more inspiring person because you have this information. And, you know, disconnect from this system as much as you can and get involved in your life. You know, think about what you really want to do and go and do it. You know, what is stopping people doing what they really want to do? And sure, you might be tied up with the family and kids or whatever. Well, take them with you. You know, put a bit of stuff down, some of the trappings that you've got hanging onto around you that you think make you who you are. Maybe sell some of this useless baggage, get a bit of pocket money and go and do something. Do something that you've always wanted to do in your life and get to experience the world. Because when you do, you're going to find out that it's full of people just like you, and nobody wants war anywhere. And everybody lives in fear of the nations next door and in fear of their own government. And it's all the same in every single country. Even the education system, it's the same in every country. All the news, it's the same in every country. The same in every country. People need to think about that, the fact that it's the same in every single country. You know, this isn't by chance that our world is run this way. It's constructed to be run this way. So even knowing that is hugely empowering. You know, and the biggest asset we've got is the people around us. So get to know your neighbors. This is something I've been saying for 10 years on air, Ellie, like get to know the people around you. These are the greatest asset that you've got. Doesn't matter what their skin color is, what their faith is, what religion they adhere to or anything. Doesn't matter. That's all just baggage. That's all just noise. You know, on the bottom line is they're people. They're in the same position as you are. And they're scared. They're scared of the future. They're scared of paying the bills. You know, they're scared of what the neighbors think about them. They're scared of being robbed. They're scared of all the things that people are scared of, which is all designed and contrived and constructed to be that way. It's all legislated to be that way. So, you know, even that is a hugely empowering thing, I think. You know, when I look at this system, you know, I don't have any fear of it at all. I find it fascinating that people actually believe it's real, actually believe authority is real and don't question it. You know, I mean, sure, there's a bit of fear involved with the police and stuff, but, you know, I'm not saying do battle with the police on the side of the road, but ask the right questions to authority all the time. You know, ask the right questions to anybody, any mayor or any politician or any of these people, and, you know, you're going to see them run and backpedal. And like that little rant I had earlier, if someone was to stand up and say that at a public meeting or a government meeting or a council meeting or a meeting at the mayor's office or something like that in front of a crowd of 200 or 300 or 400 people, a lot of people are going to go, hey, yeah, what he said, that makes a lot of sense. Can you explain yourself, please? And when they don't and they run from the room, perhaps that will cause the penny to drop in the community as well. You know, we can make a difference if we're eloquent enough about it, non-confrontational about it, just ask intelligent questions and ask them to please explain, well, how come if this is like this, then you can get away with this because it's not acceptable. It's not what we employ you to do. We haven't forgotten that you're an employee. So can you explain yourself? Because if you can't, we're going to have these guys in this uniform over here come and arrest you because you're doing the wrong thing. And we've identified that, so now you have to explain it. You know, that could make a difference, taking that sort of an approach. So hopefully more people will do it.
And you can make small differences. I know people who've had successes going to city council, having, you know, the school hardwire computers as opposed to Wi-Fi, because I really have issues with Wi-Fi and you know, technology in general is quite frightening, and all these weapons that are being rolled out that, you know, you can't even fight them. You know, like directed energy weapons and all these, you know, the HARP systems. And I think that's kind of a way to kind of control thinking. You know, it's really scary and frightening. And kids today, they get on their phones, and I actually limit my children's screen time because they're not thinking for themselves. You know, when we were young, I might be a little bit younger than you, but it was the same. If you wanted to learn something, you had to go out and discover it. You went and you had to, you know, you had to figure it out. We come from generations where we had to figure it out. We had to use our brain. We had to find the information. And so it's really sad that these kids just Google everything. And then some of that information isn't accurate. But, you know, it's a double-edged sword with the internet. This is where we can find information that we would never be, never find. But on the other end of it, it's more controlled than ever, at least in America now. So it's quite frightening. They're shutting down YouTube channels, Facebooks. I mean, it's quite frightening. There's really a sense of our Constitution dwindling away, our rights from the Constitution.
Well, yeah, but you know, the question is how much of the information that we're even finding on the internet is true. That's the thing, you know.
Exactly. Yes. True.
Like I said, with all the books that have come out in the last 100 years, how do we know how much of this is true? Now, certainly, everything we've been told about history is false. You know, everything is false.
Some I would people say that it's the opposite. That everything we know, the opposite is true. Some people say
well,
that.
Yeah, well, virtually, but I would say that our history in the last 200 years is probably about 50% true, and before, from 200 years to 500 years ago, or from 200 years to 500 years ago is probably about 25% true, and from prior to that is probably about 10% true up to 1,000 years ago. And prior to that, it's all completely fabricated. Yeah, I mean, certain things that we are aware of, like I'm saying earlier, such as the Battle of Troy, certain events that happened, we know these things happened. The question is, when did they happen, and what were the real reasons for them? Even World War II, you know, what was the real reasons for that? Even the actual founding of the United States, the founding of Australia, even these dates come into question. Like I said, where did all that stuff get built underneath San Francisco? Where do they do? That's massive construction, that sewer system underneath San Francisco.
In Portland, when was that constructed? As well. It goes up north as well.
Yeah, when were those things constructed in the building of these cities that were apparently started off as these western towns? When did they think that, oh, gee, we might need to put in this huge subterranean, virtually as big as the city itself, underground?
Exactly. You know?
When was all this done? This is huge, huge constructions that were undertaken. When was this done? And it's all connected. It isn't like they would have, oh, well, we're building a building here. We'll just put a sewer drainage system beneath it. No, this is all connected beneath the city. You can virtually go. It is, like I said, virtually a city underneath San Francisco in the sewer system. This is a massive sewer system, big, cavernous, old brickwork. You know, when was this done? Who did it? What was the cost? We're talking millions and millions of dollars in cost in building all this sort of stuff. You know, so how old is that city? How old is the United States really? Was it really founded when we were told it was founded? Because all we know is what's written in the history books, and all we really know is what exists in living memory. We don't know anything that we're told to be true at all. None of it. You know,
why the grand facade though? Why are they doing this? Why are they trying to mislead us? What's the point in changing history as far as the dates go?
Because it creates the concept that government has been this gradual progression. It provides the chronology needed to justify the existence of government, you know. And through the books and the controlled education system, they basically taught people that this is what it is. Government is there. You know, like when I was a kid, I couldn't figure it out. When I said to, we were up in the forest. I said to Mum, let's come and live here. And she said, well, we can't. I said, why? And she said, well, we don't own the land. And I said, what do you mean own the land? Who owns the land? She said, government owns the land. And I said, how did they get it? And she said, oh, you'll understand when you get older. And I could never figure it out. And I'm looking at all this stuff, and I'm getting taught all this stuff in school, and I'm thinking, I still can't figure out how government owns anything. I can't figure out where they came from, why we need them. Why are they here? Why do we need government? Why do we need to be told what we can do and can't do? There's all this stuff I want to do that I can't do because I'm told I'm not allowed to. Why aren't I allowed to? I don't want to hurt anybody. I just want to go and do stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, so I couldn't figure it out when I was a kid. You know, so you've got to create this concept that there's nothing you can do. You can't change it. It's always been this way. Why would you question it? You know, and you've got to do what you're told to create this whole concept. There's this whole timeline. And also because I would suggest that cataclysms, whether they are caused or whether they're natural, don't happen every 26,000 years, don't happen every few thousand years, but possibly happen every few hundred years, you know. And, you know, the world is very different to what we think. Like I said, the vast mining operations that have gone on for so long, where's all this stuff going? What's all the vast mining operations in Antarctica and all of that? Look at the shape of the mountains. They just look like they've all been cut out through giant rotary plows and stuff.
And look at things like down there too.
Yeah, and look at things like the Grand Canyon, Colorado River through the Grand Canyon. How did that happen? How did a river cut a hole through the Grand Canyon the way it did, that deep through that canyon? Because that's raised ground. Now, how did a river ever cut its way through any mountain? Now, a river will follow a valley. A river will always follow the path of least resistance. Water will follow, it'll always follow the downward slope. It'll follow the shoulders in any valley. You know, it'll follow the valleys. When you get to a mountain, it'll go around it. How did it ever cut through that whole mountain range to form the Grand Canyon?
Mm-hmm.
It's not possible. It would have gone around it. It would have gone over the top of the mountain and then bore its way down. I mean, it's not possible. No river ever cut its way through a mountain. It went around the mountain. It went into the valleys. So, and when you look at the Grand Canyon, it looks like one big, long, huge mine. The steeped, look at it. It looks like it's been cut through giant rotary plows. The whole thing has been mined. All of Australia looks like it's been mined. And we're talking huge, huge, massive mining operations. It's like the place is mined and then it's just flooded out every few hundred years, which would explain the mud flood. There's a film that came out. It was very controversial that came out, probably a year ago, called There Are No Forests on the Earth. Did you ever see that?
No, I didn't.
The Flat Earth has got hold of it. The guy, it was released by a Russian guy, and he titled the video, There Are No Forests on the Flat Earth. Now, he doesn't believe the Earth is flat, but he did that to get the attention of the Flat Earthers. And what he was suggesting was that things such as, was it Devil's Mountain in Wyoming? You familiar with Devil's Mountain? Was used
yes.
in Close Encounters.
Yes.
He's suggesting that this is not a mountain. It's not a basalt column, not a lava column. It's a stalk of an ancient plant, a giant plant, like a flax seed. He's suggesting that all the tabletop messes that we see across Venezuela and all this stuff are not actually messes. They're not mountains. They're tree stumps of giant silicon trees that used to be here. And this sounds very preposterous to people. People think of silicon life, you know, because of, you know, our education, we're taught that life has to be biological, blah, blah, blah. But if you think of a fractal reality and you really start looking at some of this information and you start really examining some of these mountain ranges and you start really examining the oceans, you start coming up with some pretty outrageous concepts. But really, when you look at them, they make perfect sense. And it seems really, really avant-garde to people. But the whole concept of mining silicon trees, which would be crystal and all sorts of stuff like that. Like a world such as like, what we saw in Avatar, the film Avatar. Perhaps that was what this earth was once like, because that is the scale of the mining operations that we see. And again, this is a huge rabbit hole to go down, and it's hard to put it into a nutshell because there's so much information that you need to look at before you start considering this concept. But really, when you start looking at the information, you start going down this rabbit hole and trying to figure out what happened in history. It kind of leads you to this point. And discovering this mud flood has, like I said, caused me to reevaluate everything. And the amount of civilizations that exist beneath the oceans as well, this is huge. And even if you look at Google Earth, how accurate these photographs are, whether they are or not over the ocean from ocean mapping, but there appear to be all sorts of weird lines and structures and grid patterns and all sorts of stuff under the oceans as well, which I would suggest was that, like I said earlier, that the Atlantean civilization, whatever that was very likely a worldwide civilization. And sand is an interesting thing. You know, we're told that sand is created from thousands upon thousands, millions of years of the oceans grinding against rocks and shells and all sorts of stuff and creating this sand. It seems like there's an awful lot of sand. That's an awful lot of rocks and shells and stuff to be ground down. And why do we see, like, places like Australia is mostly sand? This country is virtually, you know, 6/8 sand. So why? Why so much sand? Was this all underneath the ocean? And is this the result of, you know, water grinding against shells and stuff? And it's red sand here in Australia because it's rusted. It's iron sand. You know, interesting stuff, really interesting stuff. If the big messes were, in fact, trees, as this Russian researcher is considering or suggesting, and they were really cut down by some form of giant cutting instrument, what would the sawdust look like from these giant trees? Perhaps it would look like sand. Perhaps that's what the sand is. I mean, I don't know, this is really bizarre stuff, but this is the sort of stuff I've been considering lately. Perhaps the sand on the oceans is really the sawdust from mining all of this stuff, from what this world used to be. And we'd be talking machinery that would be, you know, would fill the sky. You know, one of these cutting wheels, one of these mining pieces of mining equipment would virtually fill the sky. So to us, it would seem completely out of this world. But when you think of reality being a fractal and everything being fractal, everything being fractal in nature, even when we look at vegetables and things now, look at tiny little plants, they look like little trees, look like little miniature versions of the trees we've got here. Well, what if the next level up was silicon? The next level of the fractal was silicon. And something has been harvesting all of this stuff. And whatever that something is has also put this veil over our mind whereby we can't see what's happening outside visible light. We can't see what's happening around us. Like I said, when I drank ayahuasca, and the message I got was that what I was seeing was the real world and that this is the dream. You know, the closing of our pineal gland, it doesn't just dumb us down. It limits our access to our higher senses. So that we only have this five-sense version of reality, but there are a lot of other higher senses. We don't have access to the emotional language that we're speaking, the language of manifestation. You know, we've manifested this reality around us through the fear vibration that we're kept in through everything this system feeds us, the division that we're kept in through these nation-states that have been constructed around us, which are completely unnecessary, the division that's constructed around us via even teaching us all different languages so we can never really communicate our ideas to each other. You know, and then leading, yeah, and then leading the world into English, which is a completely disconnected language, which removes all spiritual concepts completely from any real understandings. So, you know, I just wonder what has caused us to be led into this point, but trying to find a remedy to it, you know, trying to find what we can do is the most difficult thing, because ultimately the only thing we can do is to break the brainwashing in people, for people to step away from the system, because it's fiction. All this stuff is fiction. They come and destroy you and put a fracking well in your backyard because some guy wrote it on paper that they can come and destroy the environment. Well, hang on, that's causing harm. If you write down a law that you can do that, well, that politician wrote that down, it's causing harm. That's why we constructed a legal system to prevent the causation of harm. You can't tell me that it's doing this and I'm breaking the law by stopping you, because the law is about the prevention of the causation of harm. So, you know, this is ridiculous. I'm not causing harm to you by coming and stopping your mining well. You're causing harm by constructing the mining well. So if the legislation is protecting you, then the politician is in abusive office and he needs to be removed immediately. So the question is, why aren't the police doing their job and dealing with these criminal activities of these politicians? You know, yeah, I said to a police officer and they kind of sit there look with a bamboozled look on their face, because you've just logically led them to the point that shows them that they're actually supporting criminal activity rather than preventing crime. And yet that's what they joined the police force to do. So, you know, you start talking to these people in this way. Some of them have little epiphanies and they start thinking about what they're doing and start questioning things and end up having to leave the force because they just can't handle it anymore. You know, but unfortunately they're employing reasonably stupid people into the police force anymore, so you can't have these conversations with them. But, you know, that's the way people need to approach it. You know, we've got to completely step away from this system and realize that we're under attack here. I mean, there's a war going on. The human race is being exterminated through every means possible that they can do it. We're having our lifespans limited. We're being sprayed. They're destroying our water table. They're preventing us from growing food. They're doing everything they can to put people in hardship. And, you know, even if you believe government is real, then perhaps somewhere in the back of your mind you believe they're public servants still. Well, that should be a clue in that, you know, servant. Well, they're not serving you very well. So even if you do believe government is real and it has some value, well, the servants have taken over the mansion and it's about time you called it. Now, personally, I don't think government has any value at all. They're all a bunch of criminals, and I'll call it that way. But however you want to do it.
I'm sorry for interrupting. It's ironic they call themselves public servants because, again, it's quite the opposite. It's like we're serving the government, the so-called government.
Well, yeah, they've tricked people into believing that they're our rulers, but they're not. And, you know, when you can think of all this stuff that I've talked about, I mean, government is a very, very recent addition to the human experience. So that's very empowering. And I know it's probably going to be really odd to think about this whole concept of giant silicon trees and sand being sawdust and all sorts of stuff like that. But hey, just think outside the box a little bit and consider whether it's maybe a possibility. And, have a look at some of the mountain ranges through Antarctica and have a look at the Grand Canyon and ask yourself how rivers ever cut their way through any mountains. Because it's really not possible for water to do that. It's going to find the lowest point, and it's always going to go through that. It's never going to cut through the middle of a hill. So, you know, we really need to rethink all of this stuff, because when you really do step back and look at it, it's actually very, very empowering to imagine that just a few hundred years ago, we were in a very, very different world. And, you know, all it's going to take to get back to that and to free ourselves from this weird state that we're in is for people to simply stop what they're doing and step away from it. And, you know, again, the biggest asset that we've got is the people around us. So, you know, connect with people around you and realize that we don't actually have to do any of this stuff at all.
Yeah, have a discussion. But you know what is dumbfounding to me is they're destroying all the resources. What about them? If there's some master plan, there's not going to be anything left for them.
Well, the master plan is to exterminate the human race and to steal all the resources that this earth has to offer. So I think that works fine with their master plan. I mean, they have underground bases and stuff as well. So, I mean, the earth will replenish itself eventually.
Right. I thought that as well. I'm like, well, eventually it'll replenish itself. And I'm quite aware of these underground cities.
Yeah. And, you know, you can easily just flood it again and then rewrite history for the next batch. Go underground, flood the people that are here, some cataclysm, weather wars, however they want to do it, starve them out, whatever. And then go to the next level and then rewrite history again and do the whole thing again. You know, you can go and look at some of the maps. If you get on Google Earth and you start doing an extensive look around places like the Florida Everglades and some of the canal estates in Florida, you'll find remnants of old canal estates that they're built on top of. There's one photo that I saw, which is an incredibly perplexing photograph of an old canal system, flooded grid system, obviously not in use, perhaps was in use, looks like maybe hundreds of years ago, but there are electricity poles up through this grid system. And you think, well, okay, maybe there was something there recently, but it's all flooded. It's all just this canal grid system that doesn't seem to be serving any purpose. So were the poles put there while it was flooded? Why were they put there while it was flooded? And why are they kind of like modern-looking electricity poles? I mean, they're wooden. They're old. They look like they're maybe from the 30s or something, but there wasn't anything there in the 30s in this area. So why are these poles there? And if they were, if they were put there since we've had an electricity grid here, what was there? Was the place not flooded at some stage? Because it just doesn't make sense that this flooded place would be this grid system with these old electricity poles. Perhaps, this was all done 200 years ago and there was some sort of a flood cataclysm and bang, oh, look, we've just discovered America. Here we arrive, blah, blah, blah. You know, how do we know? How do we know what we're being fed? Suddenly we all just sort of found ourselves living in these countries as children, getting fed what our parents were told. They just got fed what their parents were told. Many of them came on ships from somewhere else, our grandparents. So, yeah, what happened? What happened? Nothing's what we're told. But what are these electrical poles doing in this flooded area that's never been used? If electricity's only been around for what we've been told it's been around, it's a really, really perplexing photograph. And there's things like this. I mean, there's so much wrong with what we've been told. And it appears, like I said, history was written possibly even as recently as the 1900s and definitely as recently as the 1700s, around about when they changed the calendar, even if that happened then. I mean, I just question everything now. I question the dates of everything. Like I said, all I can prove is that which exists within my living memory, and all anyone can really prove is that which exists within living memory anywhere. All the rest of it is just hand-me-downs.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. So what do you think is going to happen in the future? Like, say, forecast the next 5-10 years, what are you predicting? What do you think is going to unfold?
Hopefully a huge awakening, and people will free themselves from this slavery system. If they don't, then in 5 or 10 years from now, we will be completely locked into this slavery system and people will have no concept at all of what freedom looks like. The kids growing up through this system now are going to have no reference point at all for what freedom looks like. So that's the two choices that we've got. Either complete automation and far, far less people on earth than what there is now, or perhaps a grand epiphany. And people will step away from this system in mass. You know, I'm feeling really positive at the moment, actually. I'm thinking that there is going to be a grand epiphany. There's so much information coming out now. And one of the reasons I've come home is I want to take a little time off the radio show and work on another documentary and get all this information out to people in some sort of a cohesive format. Try to bring some pretty out there and grandiose concepts to people in a way they can understand it, because it may seem like a lot of what I've talked about on the show today has been pretty out there, and it has been a very, very different conversation to what I normally have in interviews lately, but that's what I get after I've traveled. I got so much to process when I get home, and usually when I do a 10 or 12 hour flight, I've got all this stuff rattling around in my head, and so the first interview when I get home gets all this esoteric stuff, and that happens to be you. So
sounds good to me. It's been very, very interesting. So, you know, we have a few more minutes here left. We have like 5 more minutes. So do you want to go ahead and plug your website and your documentaries, and maybe we'll stop a few more minutes after you do that to maybe tell us a little bit about your upcoming projects and maybe a little more information, this documentary you're planning on doing. It may cover a lot of what we're discussing.
Well, yeah, we'll cover a lot of that. My website is thecrowhouse.com. You'll get everything about me there. You'll get all the links to my Facebook pages and my YouTube channel and my DTube channel and BitChute and my Steemit page and all that sort of stuff. It's all there on thecrowhouse.com. When you go there, you'll just see a little face there as the logo. You've got to click the logo to enter into the website, and everything's there. People who want to subscribe, you can subscribe to Patreon there, but you don't have to. I mean, everything's free. There's no advertising on the website, but any support is greatly helped, gratefully mm-hmm. needed. But, I don't have a monetized YouTube account. I've tried to do all this sort of stuff without bringing money into it because I think it's important that people get the information. So you'll find everything on thecrowhouse.com regarding me. There's also a website called the Full Circle Project. And that's fullcircleproject.net. And that's a website where you can go to link up with people, find people in your local community, create support groups, action groups, discussion groups, whatever you want. Just connect with people and find people in your local area that want to connect. A lot of people are awake, but they don't have anyone around to talk to. So you can find people in your local area with Full Circle Project and get motivated on the ground and start making a difference in your community. And start questioning these people in the right way, asking the right questions and asking them to explain themselves why they think they can get away with what they're doing. You know, if law is real, you know, at least they're going to demonstrate to you in the greater community there is no law. So get involved any way you can on the ground to make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. You know, and also try to appreciate, you know, I kind of touched upon that. I think you need to go out and appreciate something every day, as dark as the world can seem, you know, getting out and, you know, hiking and traveling, as you say, and something, you know, for me, it's a flower. Go outside and look at a flower and take in Oregon, you know, where I live is very beautiful. Australia, I've always wanted to go there. I think it's fantastic to me. And I know a lot of surfers who go there. Amazing surf, from what I understand.
Oh, it's beautiful, and you should do that. I mean, I'm really fortunate. I don't have to really think about that because I live in a paradisical place here in the country. I'm just looking at my sliding door there, and there's a peacock sitting on my doorstep wondering when I'm going to come out and feed him for the morning. So
peacocks. I wasn't aware that you guys have peacocks there. I know you have kangaroos.
Yeah, we have five or six peacocks that decided to move into our yard here, and it's quite beautiful. So it's a beautiful place. But thank you very much for having me on.
No, thank you so much, and take care and good luck with all your endeavors and future projects. I'll be watching. I'll be looking
thank
for them.
You.
Thank you. Don't forget to donate.
Night of our lives, but you're gonna let it be the worst.
And I guarantee a week won't go by in your life you won't regret walking out, letting them get the best of you.
Well, I'm not going home.
We've got too far,
and I'm gonna stay right here and fight for this lost cause.
A day may come when the courage of men fails,
but it is not this day.
The line must be drawn here, this far, no farther.
I'm not saying it's gonna be easy.
You're going to work harder than you ever worked before.
But that's fine. We'll just get tougher with it.
If a person grits his teeth and shows real determination,
failure is not an option.
That's how winning is done.
Believe me when I say
we can break this army here
and win just one for the Gipper.
But I say to you, what every warrior has known since the beginning of time,
you've got to get mad.
I mean plumb mad dog mean.
If you would be free men, then you must
fight to fulfill that promise. Let us
cut out their living guts
1 inch at a time.
And they will know what we can do.
Let no man forget how menacing we are. We are lions.
You're like a big bear, man.
This is your time.
Seize the day.
Never surrender.
Victory or death.
That's the Chicago.
Who's with me?
29
clips!
All right, let's fly!
And gentlemen in England, now abed, shall
know my name is the Lord! But I
tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take
our Independence Day!
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. One world coming together to bring freedom home. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning, warning.
We've got to stop them. They're going to kill us all.
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor.